Wednesday, Anna DeVlantis here in the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. That's where I am. Glad you're here, wherever you are, in your car, maybe you're at home, maybe you're sitting having a martini at the Ceres Cafe. Oh boy. They're going to get a lot of sightseers, I get the sense, over there at the Ceres Cafe. That is the restaurant, we've come to learn, that's at the center of the controversy surrounding former Superintendent Eddie Johnson, you know, that incident that led up to his dismissal. It's a place known for its really stiff drinks, we've come to learn, the privacy, very few windows, you know, the kind of place, right?
It is now trending nationally, or at least was
it
yesterday on Twitter, nationally.
It's amazing, and it's trending for all the reasons you might expect. It's one of those places where you go, and you don't ask a lot of questions, right?
No.
It's like one of those places where it's like, who's asking, right?
Yeah.
My dad had a tavern at Clark and Devon for many years. It was kind of one of those taverns, you know, the working man tavern that you didn't ask a lot of questions. And certainly after you left, nobody really asked what happened there. Well, that's it's interesting. There's some great reporting on this today by the Sun-Times and the developments. Frank Main is here in studio to bring us the latest on that story. I think it's fair to say, though, that, you know, let me think what you guys say. Tell me what you have to say about this. Do you think it's fair to say that people who were supporting the superintendent yesterday, defending him, saying this, that there wasn't enough out there yesterday to warrant his dismissal, have changed their minds now?
At least to some degree, I would say yes.
I would think so.
Tell us what you think. 312-981-7200. Did it change your mind at all? If you thought it was completely unfair for the mayor to do what she did, fire him over that. Now that we know a few more details, it was a member of his security detail, a woman he put in that position, fellow police officer who he was seen out with. She was his driver, we've come to learn. There's video of them together that pretty much sealed his fate, it seems. I just wonder if it changed any minds. And maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't change your mind. I've said many times, I said it yesterday, I'll say it again today. I think that, you know, the 30-year plus career in public service, working for the Chicago Police Department, is not erased or undone. Everything he's done for the city is not gone by this one incident. But I think it's easier to understand today why Mayor Lightfoot was put in the position that she was to make the moves that she did. We're going to get to Frank Main in a second. A few headlines about the Ceres Cafe today. Lauren, you're talking about how it's trending. If you haven't been there, it tells the whole story, I think. Chicago Tribune headline, 2 or 3 drinks at Ceres will get anyone in trouble.
Oh, yeah. I saw a subtitle earlier today as well that says, where careers end.
This is it. Destroyer of careers.
Yeah.
Ceres Cafe, that article you reference, is out of Chicago Magazine. Kate Bernott wrote this amazing piece about the Ceres Cafe that makes you feel like you're there, like you're 3 drinks, 3 martinis in, belly up to the bar, about to do something really wrong. And you just kind of get a sense for what the place is all about. She wrote this great article. So we're going to talk to her. Coming up in the show, but right now, here in studio, is Frank Main. He's a staff reporter, longtime crime police reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. And you also have a new crime podcast, which Lauren and I were pretty excited about, True Crime Podcast with the Sun-Times and WBEZ.
Yes, both together, called Motive, and it's about a person who was a kid who was arrested when he was 13 for murder.
Wow.
Got out of prison when he was 30 years old, wrongfully convicted, and then got $25 million from the city in a settlement and has blew the money on a crime spree, essentially. And so we kind of deconstruct how all that happened.
Man, what an interesting. You also have another one coming up about women in Spain, right? So that's another situation we can talk about another time. But I want to get to the details here about, bring us up to speed on what has transpired. I know you've been following it. There's great work at the Sun-Times on the story of Eddie Johnson and the new details that have come out.
Well, I mean, originally, you know, Eddie Johnson was asleep at the wheel with his engine running in Bridgeport last month on October 17th. And he said, you know, he has had all these health problems. He had a kidney transplant, and people were sympathetic to the fact that it might have been, a health thing. He told the mayor later that he had a couple drinks, and she let the media know about that, and everybody's like, okay, well, we understand that. There were some kind of questions, I would say, that reporters had about whether, you know, this was the whole story, but that's all we had at the time. Then yesterday, as everybody knows, she announced that she had additional information that showed that Eddie Johnson was lying about this whole thing, and she summarily fired him as police superintendent. So
my sense, though, yesterday, though, Frank, was that most of us believed at that time that this was maybe an extramarital situation, maybe it was just something else and didn't warrant it. But more details have come out about who she was, and I think that's what makes a difference.
Well, that's right. I mean, so the mayor said that she wasn't going to talk about the details of the case because she wanted to spare his family the details, essentially. And, as we did our reporting yesterday, we learned that video showed that he was at this Ceres bar, had many more than two drinks. I mean, they were drinking for three hours. He was with a woman who was on his detail and his driving detail. And apparently they were kissing at the time. That's something that we had heard. The video, surveillance video from the bar was subpoenaed, and the inspector general got that. And we have not seen the video, but our sources are telling us that that was what was on the video.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been to Ceres Cafe?
I have not, but I know they pour four-finger drinks, and yeah. I want to go now.
What was that cocktail?
Yeah, I saw a picture surfacing yesterday that's going around. Someone ordered a whiskey ginger ale, and it is a full short glass of straight whiskey and a can of ginger ale. That is their idea.
I think you just wave the can around the drink and let the ginger ale waft on
top. Use it as like a chaser. You're going back to college here.
Has this been on your radar, Frank? Because it wasn't on mine. Is it the
Chicago
Board of Trade?
It is. It's a trader bar. I mean, so, you know, Board of Trade guys go there after work and, you know, have a few, three or four before they go home on the train. So I've known about it for a long time, just never been in there. It used to be a smoke-filled bar, you know.
It's not a place that politicals go, like, you know, political figures and guys like that go. It's more of traders, because you don't see any traders at the Chicago Board of Trade anymore. It's a different atmosphere.
No,
there.
But back in the day, I mean, you guys in, you know, funny colored jackets that from the right. floor would go in there and drink after work, so, or sometimes during work, maybe.
All right, our guest is Frank Main from the Chicago Sun-Times. We'll have more from him coming up. I want to ask you about the developments that you have. You have at the Sun-Times right now in terms of what we know in terms of a cover-up, that there is some sort of investigation into that within the police department. There's more fallout after what happened, and more to report here on WGN. All right, Frank Main is here from the Chicago Sun-Times. He's been tracking the developments here, a longtime police reporter. And I remember covering the police beat myself over the years, and I always respected your work, Frank. You always seemed to have the scoop, and we'd always be like, what does Frank got? And Frank, what'd you say?
I've been doing it too long.
You've been doing it since when? How long?
1998.
1998. How about that? You know where a few bodies are buried, and you know a few things about town. I mean, you know the way this town works. Does it surprise you? It seems like Eddie Johnson, very well respected, loved. I think people thought he was, you know, they appreciated the job he did. They knew he didn't ask for this job. He was put in this job when the other candidates, for whatever reason, were not chosen to be in it. And he's just weeks away from retirement. It just seems there's sort of a sadness, I think, about the way this all went down.
I like him personally. I think overall he did a good job. I think that sometimes superintendents are made for the era that they were, you know, they served in. And, you know, he came in after the Laquan McDonald situation and reached out to all sorts of stakeholders in the community, you know, African-American leaders, et cetera, and spent a lot of time doing that and kind of calming the situation down. And under his leadership, you have to give him credit. You know, homicides are down significantly since that happened. I think that he started to lead the department through some of the reforms that came out of the Laquan McDonald killing. So, mm-hmm. All of that's on the positive side of the ledger. It is sad to see that somebody goes out the door in a scandal, you know, for a seeming ethical lapse, a big ethical lapse.
Right. It does seem that way. I thought the Sun-Times talk to the woman, or is somehow you're quoting something about the police officer who was there with him. Is she speaking out in any way? Have we heard from her?
We haven't specifically talked to her. There are two problems here. First one is that the mayor says he lied about what happened that night. The second one is that it's clear from the sources that, you know, he had a relationship, a friendship, more than that, with a subordinate, you know, who's on his detail. Those two things are you know, in this day and age are, you know, fireable offenses, you would think.
Just someone he put in that position as well.
You know, it's you just saw that at McDonald's. We just saw this, what seems like a similar situation. We never get all the details to know exactly if it's equal or the same, but it seems the same way. But it does feel as if, in your experience covering police matters, is this the kind of thing that you see people go down for? How would a rank and file member be treated?
See, it's changed over the years. The police department has gotten more and more serious about something. It's kind of arcane, but it's called Rule 14. It essentially says that police officers can't lie on police reports or, you know, lie about an incident. And the police board has been firing police officers in recent years for doing that, especially when Mayor Lightfoot was the head of the police board. I mean, the board was starting to fire people for this. McCarthy, our former police superintendent, was very adamant about firing officers for lying. And so, if Eddie Johnson indeed did lie to the mayor about this incident, that seems like it'd be something that any rank and file officer could also be fired for.
You've seen other officers go down for lying about incidents like this.
Sure. It used to be a real source of criticism of the police department that cops would get caught in lies and they would just get a free pass, but it hasn't been that way in recent years.
Do you get any sense from the rank and file how they are about this, losing their police superintendent under these circumstances, this kind of a dramatic shift, and then Tom Selleck taking over? The superintendent is back, right? The interim from LA.
I'm never really able to gauge what the quote-unquote rank and file thinks. I mean, there are places you can go, blogs you can look at where they don't like any of their leaders, right?
They're critical of absolutely everything.
Yeah, and so they have been of him as well. I can't remember a time when I saw, you know, laudatory comments about any superintendent in recent years. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know, again, personally, I know a lot of individual police officers who liked Eddie Johnson, who thought he was doing a good job. Liked him going all the way back to the Gresham District, where he had been. What the zeitgeist is about Eddie Johnson, I don't really know.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I talked to Walter Jacobson, legendary Walter Jacobson, who works here at WGN Radio, and I said, well, what do you think, Walter? And he was too busy to go on air with me, but I tried to get him come on air, but he said that he was absolutely totally upset about his like personal life being dragged through the papers and that kind of thing, that it just felt wrong to him. He was so mad about it. But then I think he understood ultimately, because it was a police officer, because of the circumstances, that the mayor had to do what she did in that case. The woman who has been reported about, that they were just talking, she talked about how she was in a troubled marriage and he was too, and that kind of thing. And this happened. That's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, we were told that is what was going on, and that she did file for divorce back in 2018. We confirmed that through records, but to the best of my knowledge, I don't think we personally talked to her.
Well, I think some of the frustration is so much focus is on this discretion, when maybe shouldn't we be looking at more how intoxicated was he possibly behind the wheel, or is there the cover-up? You know, these seem like bigger issues rather than the discretion, you know.
Mm-hmm, the choices made, right?
You're right.
I cannot say to how people should live their personal lives, but yes, it's, you know, it seems unfair that this is being dragged into the public eye because it's connected to this whole situation.
So a few weeks until retirement. I'm 50-50. 708 says, we have to remember prior to this incident, he had dedicated a long time to being a police officer, and we've not seen the video. And then people are also concerned about him losing his pension. That's not going to happen, though, from what I understand.
No.
That unless you commit a felony as a police officer, that's not in jeopardy.
Right. I mean, there's a little nuance here. He's fired as superintendent, but he is still a lieutenant in the Chicago Police Department, and he's still going to be drawing pay as a lieutenant, and that will go toward his pension. The next question is whether the mayor tries to fire him outright as a lieutenant in the police department. That was his service position.
So do you think that would happen, Frank? Or why?
I don't know. I mean, will she come under pressure to completely get rid of him? And you know, he still would have a pension from all of the years of his service, and it'd be pretty substantial. And like you said, he's not going to lose it. He's not going to be convicted of a felony in this situation. So
I get it. Gary McCarthy was fired, and so we're not altogether unused to this position of being, you know, seeing this happen suddenly. But a lot of people, I think, the feeling was that he was a fall guy for the Laquan McDonald thing. There were many other people that you could have blamed for the way that was handled and what went down: the $5 million payout to the mom, the secrecy around the details, the desire to keep everything quiet, the cover up in that case. And yet, in Eddie Johnson's case, it feels as if he might have made his own bed. I don't know that the two are comparable.
Yeah, for lack of better words, yeah, I would say so. I mean, you look at Phil Klein; he was also a well-respected police superintendent back in the day. Mm-hmm. He was forced out over a police officer beating up a female bartender, and you know, was that really his fault?
How could he have controlled that?
A lot of people thought that it was just a pretext for Mayor Daley to get rid of him. That's a good point. It seems like this is the first time where somebody's own actions, personal actions, have led to their dismissal, mm-hmm. right?
When you look at the federal consent decree and all of the restrictions placed on this department, the new police chief, whoever that is, after our interim chief, it's going to have a lot of responsibility ahead of them, a lot of things they're going to have to do to both earn the respect of the rank and file, but also meet those types of, you know, the things that bring us forward, the reform that the mayor is calling for and the federal consent decree calls for in very specific terms.
Well, Charlie Beck, who's going to be the interim superintendent, comes from LA at a time when they had really terrible problems with something called the Rampart scandal. Was one of the things he had to deal with, dirty cops operating in a district in LA, and he cleaned that up. He's known for reform. He's known as being a tough guy. So I think he'll be able to move the police department in that direction. I think there will be a lot of cleaning out of top police brass that he doesn't think can do the job or do what he thinks needs to be done. I think the bigger issue here, and we alluded to it earlier, is possible cover-up. I mean, if you look at the Laquan McDonald story, where, you know, Eddie Johnson was essentially appointed superintendent because of that situation. There was an alleged cover-up in that. And now our sources are telling us that the inspector general is looking at a cover-up in this one. They say the cover-up and the investigation into the cover-up could be a lot more serious than what we know happened to Eddie Johnson so far. So
that's interesting to me. Would that involve other officers with knowledge? Because it appears that the officers, at least from the details I've seen, that were off at the scene that night when he was found asleep at the wheel, your police chief waves you off. If that's what happened, could they potentially be in trouble here?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if that's what they're talking about. I mean, to me, I know what you're saying. I think technically that's not what they should have done. They probably should have given him a sobriety test, mm-hmm. but it is their boss, and it's understandable, I suppose. I think maybe they have discovered a lot of other stuff that we don't know yet, behind the scenes about knowledge of this being worse than it first appeared. Well, obviously, I hate to say this, but we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot more to come out, as there was yesterday and the day before, and it just seems to unfold in that way. What did you make of Eddie Johnson's response yesterday? Because he seemed to really want to defend his reputation and speak up for himself and say, hey, he doesn't like seeing all this about himself out publicly. So what did you make of it, Frank?
Well, was he somewhat contrite, I think, but he was defending his reputation and said that, you know, one incident doesn't make your entire career or your reputation. It's the 30, you know, years that he's been a police officer and upheld the law and, you know, looked out for his city. So I get that. He punted when we tried to ask him specific questions about what we learned about what happened in the Ceres bar. I get that. His lawyer said he didn't want to talk about it, and he didn't address that in his written statement. So, I think he went halfway toward explaining what happened, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did seem that initial news conference did not match with what we've learned since. Frank Main, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. You can check him out and this at the Sun-Times, as always. Your staff reporter there covered crime for a very long time in this town. And you also host a new true crime podcast, Sun-Times and WBZ. Are you having a lot of fun with that?
Yeah, it's called Motive, and you can find it, as they say, anywhere you get your podcast. So iTunes, Chicago Sun-Times, website has it, WBZ, et cetera, et cetera.
Can we follow you on Twitter somewhere, too? Would you like to promote that? Or
nah, that's all right.
You're not on Twitter. You're just not a social media guy. No,
yeah.
Not really. Okay. All right. Thank
Frank Main Crime is my Twitter handle. So, yeah.
That's where we'll find you then. Thank you, Frank, so much.
Again, I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN in the Skyline Studios. I want to introduce you to an amazing new program, something you should know about that's helping veterans in our community. It's called Code Platoon. The founder, executive director of Code Platoon is here with us, Rod Levy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Dorsey also, he's an alum of Code Platoon. We want to hear your story in a second, Michael, but let's find out, you know, a little more about what you're doing, because it's pretty incredible. It's a program for veterans specifically and their spouses.
That's right. That's right. We have a 14-week training program. We're a nonprofit coding boot camp. Coding boot camp is kind of a new training model. The idea being you take a deeply interested beginner and you train them in a skill set to get them ready to be a professional when they're done. Our program, it's 14 weeks. We take deeply interested veterans and military spouses, and they work pretty hard, 10 to 12 hours a week, 5 to 6 days a week over those 14 weeks. By the time they're done, they're ready to become professional software developers, which, in case you don't know, is one of the greatest and fastest growing careers out there right now.
It doesn't seem like you have much trouble getting employed when you have those types of skills. I myself do not have those skills. And do you need a special brain in order to have them, or do you think a lot of people, more people than you think, could learn the types of skills that you need in order to be a software engineer or do any of these kind of tech careers?
That's a great question. A lot of people have a misconception that this is a STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math background. If you're a math kind of person, this is great. Otherwise, forget it. In fact, we do really well with people that are good at music, good at languages. There's a lot about coding has to do with understanding how to put ideas together and problem solve, and math is not required.
The other thing about coding programs, I've had some friends who said, hey, you know what, I really would like to cross-train. I'd like to have that skill. And I know your story is kind of, I want to get to your story in a minute, but they say that these programs are really expensive. How much do the programs run if you really want to go through a full training program to get you ready to actually have a job in that field?
Sure. Coding boot camps like ours typically cost around $12,000 to $20,000. Which obviously that's a pretty big order, but when you think that you're getting a total of 800 to 1,000 hours of curriculum hours, kind of like a 1-year master's degree, and you're doing that in, you know, 3 months, there's a pretty good value proposition, at least for the good coding boot camps. Now, our program, we really focus on making this accessible, so nobody that walks in the door ever ends up paying much more than $3,000. We typically give really large scholarships, or they can use your GI Bill.
And you rely, or you can use scholarships or the GI Bill to help fulfill that additional $3,000?
So $15,500 is our tuition, but we have a lot of scholarships to bring that down to around $3,000 out of pocket. The GI Bill would cover the whole thing.
And Rod, you didn't come from the world of coding yourself when you founded this. You came up with this idea, came about it. Tell us about why you did it and why you're here.
Yeah, sure. So like many boot camp grads, I was a career changer. I'd been in finance for a long time, wanted to do something different, wanted to start a business, and realized that starting a business, a lot of times that means knowing how to write, be a tech guy, how to be able to write code. And at the time, there was no such thing as a coding boot camp. I spent about 6 months spinning my wheels trying to figure out what I should do to learn tech. And then the very first coding bootcamp of its kind happened to open its doors here in Chicago. It was an organization called Dev Bootcamp. Mm. I was part of their first class. 13 weeks, 12 weeks after I started, I finished, graduated, got a job as a developer. And I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. I didn't know anything about coding when I started. And here I am making a pretty good salary and I got a lot of potential with this. Decided coding was actually hard. Too hard for me for the long run, but I love the idea of the boot camp. So I took that model, expanded it in a couple different ways, and brought it to a community that I cared about and made it, you know, a little more accessible. So again, the big scholarships are a part of it. We work with the Chicago companies to provide internships, you know, sort of bring down some of the barriers to the field.
And you chose veterans as the people you would like to introduce to coding, people who you wanted to give the opportunity to go through this. Interesting statistics. Veterans have reached a record low unemployment rate. So they've 3.2% is the unemployment rate for veterans in the U.S., even lower than the 3.5%, 3.7% from non-veterans. But the interesting thing, and I think this is what your program taps into, is often they're underemployed. They're not getting the jobs that their skills are really making them they're qualified for. Maybe people are not necessarily looking at their skills in the military as applicable, even though they should, and we know they should, but there is research that shows that doesn't always happen.
That's right. That's right. A lot of when I started this program, actually, unemployment for veterans was higher than for civilians nationwide and in Chicago. I think in Chicagoland, it's still higher for veterans, but you're absolutely right. We're not just tackling unemployment. Underemployment's a big deal. The career shift here for folks, graduates are typically, when they come in, they're making median salary in the mid-30s. When they graduate, they're making median salary in the mid-60, 70,000.
Say that again. That's a really important statistic. Yeah, when they come in, they're making...
$33,000 is our median salary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have people that were selling mattresses, and we had some folks who had high-skilled jobs. But on average, you know, they were working paycheck to paycheck. And then when they finish our program, $65,000 is the median salary. Within 2 years, it can be close to six figures.
Six figures. Wow. And it does seem as if those types of skills, you're at least for the near-term future, we don't know the future. The future's moving so quickly. We're told that all these jobs are going to be automated.
That's right.
But it feels as if those types of jobs, it's a sure bet or a good bet, good a bet as any, that they're going to be around for a while.
That's right. If someone's going to be closing the door on human work, it's going to be the developer
wow.
on the way out. But yeah, we foresee a tremendous growth in this field. The salaries reflect that. The demand is there. It's huge. And you're right. The folks writing all the instructions for the machines and everyone else, they're the coders.
What are you hearing from the veterans, and how many now have graduated? Tell us about your success stories.
We've had 72 graduate now over the course since 2016. We've had, I believe, 10 cohorts, so every session somewhere between 5 to 15 students. And like I said, median salary jump, just about double. Employment placement outcomes, around 80% of our graduates within 6 months are working in the field. And so, you know, a lot of stories of the stories I really like are the ones who we serve a lot of the what are E5s, E6 and lower. These are enlisted men and women. So corporate America wants to hire veterans, but a lot of times they focus on the really high achieving, successful officers. Everyone knows you hire, you know, a captain out of the Army. You've got somebody that's led battalions. But in fact, the really, really hardworking ones, yet the ones that get overlooked a lot, are those that come out, serve for 2, 4, 6, 8 years, didn't necessarily graduate with a college degree. They're struggling to be noticed by corporate America. And 80% of our graduates fall in that category. And they're the ones that really make the biggest leap, because software development as a white collar job is one of the very few fields that is reasonably open to having graduates that don't have college degrees.
How do you find the veterans? And is this part of the reason why you're here, I assume, is because you do want to reach out and find more people who need to take advantage of this program? You've got tremendous success. You have people doubling their salaries, people employed within 6 months, as you said. Really great things to think about, opportunity here, in terms of an opportunity mm-hmm. here. And you imagine you need some more veterans.
We're always looking to expand our classes. We want to serve the Chicago community. We also do have a remote program for folks who are not in Chicago, whether they're downstate or outside of the community. But absolutely, we have the capacity to scale. We think we're doing good work. We worked a few years to really refine the process itself. And we try to overwhelm our students with resources, both inside the classroom and out. And you're right. We're looking to always want to get the word out that this is an option for almost any veteran or military spouse, or even active duty if they're on reserve and can come to our program, as long as this is something they deeply, deeply want to do. That's what we want, people that are motivated to do this.
This is an intensive program, and you want to make sure you're really focused on it, and it's the thing for you going in. Do you really know that, though? I mean, what questions did you ask yourself in order to know if this is right?
So we actually, we screen for this, and the way we do that is we have a set of coding questions on our application. So all the time people say, well, I thought you said you're looking for beginners. Why do you have these coding questions?
Mm-hmm.
And we say, that's right. We are looking for beginners, although if you have experience or if you have a computer science degree, that's fine too. So we point them to tutorials that are free online tutorials, one that we've written ourselves, but a bunch of others that are free. There's a ton of great resources, and we say, go try it out. Take a look. It'll take you about 60 hours to go through tutorials
wow.
before you can answer our questions. However, if this is something you like, those 60 hours will fly by. And if this is something you don't like, we probably saved you 14 weeks of your life, because you probably wouldn't be able to have the interest to go through our program.
Are you in the Chicago area exclusively right now? Is that where you're looking for veterans and operating the program?
So we have two components to our program. One is in-person, and that's right downtown Chicago, easily accessible. And then we have a remote program, which is attached to the in-person program. Those students attend by a live video feed, same instructions, same instructors. They get to work with the in-person students, same support structure.
It's interesting you chose to work with military spouses, too. You hear a lot from them in terms of their work opportunities, that they need some sort of flexibility. If my husband or wife is employed or deployed, I should say, that they're, it sometimes is difficult in the workforce for the military spouse as well. And imagine that's why you're looking at them also to enter the program. They can come into the program.
That's right. That's right. We expanded our mission to include military spouses a little while back. And we did this because we saw that, first of all, other nonprofits are doing the same thing. I think widely recognizing that to support the veteran, you need to support their family structure. And the spouse is just an integral part of that. And you're right. A lot of these spouses have very different needs. They need to be able to move with their husband. They might be deployed. We have a woman who was actually in London. And her husband was deployed right outside of there. She went through a program. Now she's one of our great success stories, working in a full-time remote job. So we're very pleased to be able to serve that part of the community as well.
Speaking of success stories, we're going to come right back and talk with Michael Dorsey. He is an alumni of Code Platoon, the program we've been talking so much about. And we'll be back with Rod Levy and Michael Dorsey coming up here after break.
Homeowners, there's never been a better time to permanently fix your low water pressure, discolored water, or pipe leaks by repiping your home today. Repipe specialists have been repiping homes for over 25 years. With 40,000 home repipes completed, they stand behind their work. They have perfected the most efficient process for customer convenience, repiping an entire home in just 1 to 2 days, patching your walls, and providing a lifetime guarantee. Repipe Specialists only uses high-quality PEX or USA Grade L copper pipe. And for a limited time, get 20% off and 0% interest. Repipe Specialists, the no-hassle, value-priced, all-inclusive repipe. Call today for your free in-home estimate tailored for your home at 800-216-0195. That's 800-216-0195. 800-216-0195.
Message and data rates may apply. Individual results vary. Exclusions apply.
Contacts and glasses are such a hassle. I'd love to finally get LASIK, but
I'm going to stop you right there. If you want LASIK, then the LASIK Vision Institute has officially taken away everything standing in your way.
Isn't LASIK expensive?
Not at the LASIK Vision Institute. We're offering dramatically low prices and an absolutely free consultation. See for free if LASIK is right for you by texting TOP to 350-350.
But I'm really busy.
A text only takes seconds. The LASIK procedure typically only takes 15 minutes, and most patients can get back to work the following day. The LASIK Vision Institute uses the latest FDA-approved LASIK technology that helps the majority of patients achieve 20/20 vision. Dr. Greenberg has performed 75,000 LASIK surgeries and is one of the most experienced LASIK surgeons in Chicago. And we're offering 20% off our already low-cost services.
What's that text again?
Text TOP to 350-350. That's T-O-P to 350-350 to schedule your free consultation today.
My name is Sarah, and I'm a member of the Illinois Army National Guard. And over the last 16 years, my membership has allowed me to get my bachelor's degree, but also a master's degree. I work in the nonprofit world in Chicago here. The experiences I've gained through my deployments and also multiple training experiences have really taught me that I can do pretty much anything I set my mind to and come right back home to Chicago and be able to do the same thing, really make an impact on my community and my country. It's been a very gratifying experience for me.
Visit NationalGuard.com today. Sponsored by the Illinois National Guard.
Back here live in the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis. I have two special guests here in the studio with me. Rod Levy, you just heard from him. He's the founder, executive director of Code Platoon, a really great organization helping veterans learn how to code and be prepared for technology jobs. And they have a tremendous success rate. So it's really cool to learn about this program. Rod, before we get to Michael Dorsey, tell us how people can contact you if they would like to be part of it.
Absolutely. Our website has all the information you'd need. You can reach me directly at rod@codeplatoon.org, or the website is codeplatoon.org.
And then Michael Dorsey, you're an alum of the program and yes, a celebrated one at that. I heard that, you know, the other night at the fundraiser you spoke and everybody was just moved by your story. Are you from Chicago originally?
Yes, I am. I'm born and raised in Chicago. I actually moved to California for like 6 years, but originally from here.
Did you move to California with the military, or did you move?
I did. So I did 5 years in the military in the United States Navy. And after I got out, I decided to stay for a little bit. You know, the California weather.
It's hard to beat, right?
Exactly.
Especially if it's January.
Exactly. So I ended up moving back to Chicago, but then I was like, all right, it's time to actually make that career move. And I ended up finding Co Platoon, did a Google search. And
So you found it on your own. No one told you about it.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah.
What was your branch of military? Where were you?
Navy. I was stationed in Port Hueneme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did you ever think you'd be a coder?
Did you always
think about that?
Yeah. I always loved technology. My grandmother was actually a programmer.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Your grandmother was a programmer?
Yes. Yes.
Ahead of her time. Was she like one of those COBOL people or the old languages they used to use?
Yeah. Fortran.
Yep. So it was already sort of something you were somewhat familiar with, but what were you working, what were you doing when you first got out of the military, and why'd you decide to Google it and say, I want to make a change, I want to do something else?
Well, I was actually working at T-Mobile, and I got to a point where I knew that I wanted to continue doing what I loved. When my grandmother actually took me to work with her when I was younger, from that day forth, you know, I really just knew that this is what I wanted to do, technology. 2 years, actually, before I got out of the military, I started to kind of teach myself how to program. Really wasn't working out too well. I decided, okay, so I'm going to get out, then going to go work for a little bit, and then I was going to go ahead and go for the dream.
Yeah, and so the dream was doing this. No doubt in your mind you wanted to do it. Did the salary change for you dramatically? Did you just sort of really feel that difference?
Oh, yes. It was definitely a big difference and a big jump. It was enough for me to breathe very mm-hmm. easily.
And so, before, you sort of felt like this wasn't your forever
exactly
position or your forever job. Do you tell other people, friends you have who are in the military, or who are post-military, now living a civilian life, and are they open to this idea? Are they interested in it too? Are you finding people receptive to it?
Oh, people are very receptive to it. Everyone loves Co Platoon. Every time I tell them about it, my story, how they helped me. And it's really about Co Platoon being more of a family than an institution of learning. You do learn, but you get this family like oriented environment that just really allows you to excel. So,
you know, you think about veterans, the known for so many things, discipline. They're known for being leaders, of course, but known for having independence and the ability to achieve and the expectation that they will achieve. There's so many skills you bring to the table just as being a veteran from that service and from the time you spent in the service. But I wonder, do employers always understand that service, especially if they're not military, even if they are very open-minded about wanting to hire a veteran? Do they appreciate and understand that experience?
No, it's more of a thing that you have to show someone first. They don't understand. If you weren't an officer, they kind of say, you know, they don't really know exactly what you did. So skills, just like for me, I got out of the military. I was an E4, and I actually had people under me that I led, and that is kind of, you know, lost in translation a lot, mm-hmm. and not really understood that. You know, someone at my level does have a lot of leadership skills and just able to do really just anything.
Right, to be able to excel, because the other data we see is that veterans excel at higher percentages than people who are non-veterans in the workforce once they're there. But there is data also to support that not all employers really understand or relate to that experience and how it's applicable. Did you find some weird questions on job interviews or anything like that? I mean, did it get like, hey, try to explain this to us?
Yeah, no one understands the fact that I was in the Navy and I was never on a ship.
Because, like, how does that happen?
Yeah, the type of program, well, what I did was I was a CB, so I did civil engineering. Again, not coming from any like really technical background. So,
yeah, so that it's interesting. But now it feels as if the jobs are there. How long after you graduated from the program did you get a job, and what is the job?
So I actually got a job right away. While waiting for my job to start, I actually came on as an instructor with Co Platoon. So I was able to just give back a little, mm-hmm. and then started at my company, and it's been heavenly bliss.
I believe it. Your skills are so in demand. I see. I live in the West Loop, and they have these codathons, I think they're called, where they try to get a bunch of guys with skills like yours together.
Yes.
And they have, you know, pig roasts and bands, and they hang out in parking lots. I don't really know exactly what they do. I just see it from the outside. Mm-hmm. But I know that their skills are so in demand that they're trying to do anything to get them to be employed. We have a question here. Maybe, Rob, this is for you. 630, do you have to be in or from the military to take Code Platoon? Or a military spouse, I guess, is the other piece we've already covered.
We exclusively serve the military community. That's right.
Are there any other programs that you would know or recommend to people who are saying, hey, you know what, I like this idea of going through a program, even if I don't qualify for your program. Would I go?
There are a handful of other coding boot camps in Chicago that serve the non-military community. I'm not going to...
It's hard to endorse one unless you really know a lot about it.
Yeah, I would only say that we make an effort to make sure that our students coming in are deeply motivated to succeed, and that the organization makes an effort to identify that. If you can just sign up, watch yourself.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what does your grandmother say about you being a coder now?
Oh, she absolutely loves it. She tells
so
everyone. Yes.
That's so awesome. Thank you for sharing your story, Michael. I really appreciate you coming by, and best of luck to you. Not that you need it, but congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
Michael Dorsey, he's an alum of Code Platoon, and then Rod Levy, founder, executive director of Code Platoon. One more time, Rod, how do people find you if they want to be part of this program?
Come to our website, Code Platoon, CodePlatoon.org. We're a nonprofit.org.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
We wanted to get to this earlier. I've been waiting to get to this, Lauren. The Series Cafe, the author of that incredible article, she wrote this piece for the Chicago Magazine. And it really just makes you feel like you're there. I've never been there. I mean, just reading about it, it sounds legendary. It sounds like a place I would want to know. It's like the Chicago legendary
place. A character in the city now.
Mm-hmm. It's like a character in its own right. Her name is Kate Burnott. She's the managing editor of The Takeout. And it says she's also a certified beer judge. So she's a pretty, pretty cool chick in my book. Kate, how are you? We're trying to get her on. I'm sorry. Here she is. I got to press that button in order to hear from you. Kate, let's try it again. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I'm sorry. That was on my end here. There's this little button I have to press, and it's called phone. And that if I press that, apparently I get to hear from you. So thank you for checking in with us. What kind of response have you gotten? Because I've seen your story trending. I've seen people just pushing it out there and just having a laugh. People are saying, like, I feel like I'm three drinks in and I'm belly up at the bar and something bad's about to happen. Or I mean, like, they're just reading your article and they're like,
paints a perfect picture.
It totally does.
I've never had a piece that people said made them feel intoxicated, so I guess that's interesting first. But the response has really been cool, and actually, I don't live in Chicago anymore. I moved a few years ago, but so this I've had so much homesickness the last 24 hours. With everyone's response to this, makes me want to go back and have another drink at Sari's.
Where do you live now, Kate?
I am in the decidedly not Chicago locale of Missoula, Montana, of all places.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
But you're going to come back and go to the Sari's. Were you very familiar? It sounds like you must have been familiar, unless you just took a trip back suddenly.
No, I was quite familiar. I used to be a reporter for Red Eye, and Red Eye colleagues and I would often go there to blow off some steam and have some strong drinks.
What kind of clientele do you see around there when you were enjoying some beverages?
Or maybe you don't see. It's the big booth place, right?
such a melting pot. I mean, definitely the traders that are working in the building, but also just a lot of downtown office workers. And then because Sari's is kind of open all day. I think they open at something like 6 a.m. for breakfast.
Oh, of course they do. Mm-hmm. And are people, have you heard, are there people at the bar at that particular time, or is that not allowed?
Yeah, do you get like a mimosa as a bottle of champagne to yourself and an orange slice?
I never made it there quite that early. But I did have a friend of mine who's a bartender reach out and tell me that he used to go on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. and get breakfast and maybe a breakfast beverage. So I think there are a lot of people that have those unconventional schedules, and not everything's open, but Sari's is open.
My favorite line, a few hours of drinking at Sari's is conservatively the equivalent of three Bears tailgate keg stands. It's really an incredible piece, so check it out if you get a chance. Great work, Kate Bernot from Chicago Magazine. And enjoy Missoula, Montana, but get back here and see Chicago sometime soon, Kate.
I can't wait to. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Kate. Appreciate it. Much more to come here on WGN, and we're going to get the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom also coming up. Anna DeVlance is here in the Skyline Studios. All right, let's talk about it. This Peloton bike ad that has caught the internet by storm. I can't even understand the reaction to it. It's been so harsh. I don't really see much wrong with it, but let's listen in if you haven't heard it or you just want to hear it again. Refresh your memory. This has raised the ire of the internet.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Now.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time riding.
All right, first ride. I'm a little nervous, but excited. Let's do this. 5 days in a row. You surprised?
I am.
6 a.m. Yay.
Rising with the sun.
That was totally worth it.
Let's go, Grace in Boston. 55.
She just said my name. A year ago, I didn't realize how much this would change me. Thank you.
This holiday, give the gift of Peloton.
Nothing says you need to drop a few pounds like surprising your wife with a Peloton for Christmas is the way the headline goes. Our guests are Andrea Metcalf. She's a celebrity fitness expert. And also Adam Dicker. He's a nutritionist, but also an MMA fighter, trainer. Would you ever give your girlfriend, wife, anybody a Peloton?
$2,000, by the way.
I know.
More than
like,
that. And then that's why she should be excited.
So do you read it that way? You read it as sort of she might not accept it.
Yeah,
the
you know,
way
you've got to be careful when giving a girlfriend a present fitness related. She might take it the wrong way.
Have you ever done that though? You're in the fitness world.
I have not because I'm smarter
yoga.
Than
here's
that.
A yoga mat. So you're smarter than that.
Yeah.
See, you know these things. It's funny how I feel like men more than women are really offended by this ad because they're like, I wouldn't do that. I'd be afraid to do that. But as a woman,
I'm assuming she asked for it.
I am too. Like that's a really serious gift
and a monthly fee. Don't forget there's a monthly fee. It's the gift that you have to keep paying for.
Like a car.
We have to pay for the subscription.
Once you get the exercise programs on. I'm not that familiar with the Peloton.
To be a part of the group where they're actually taking the classes on the video screen, you have to pay for that.
Oh my gosh, on top of the $2,200.
Yeah, it's a pretty expensive gift, but I'm with you. I kind of think that she like had it on her wish list and she was so excited about it. And it was a way for her to be able to, I look at at-home fitness as a way to be able to function sometimes because you have kids, you have family, you have a job, and sometimes traveling to the gym and getting all that
stuff
together.
Or it's cold outside, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
if you don't want to get to a class in the middle of January, it does sound like a nice option. It's an expensive option. Are there better options?
Well, there's always
other options.
There's a lot of other options. I mean, a rowing machine's a heck of a lot less money, and
oh my
it's
gosh.
Still a great
free
workout.
Weights, yeah.
There's free weights.
And you might get into a good college, too, if you get one of those. Peloton's market value dropped by $942 million in one day after that ad went viral because the world just gave... there's so much backlash. Is it the surprise?
Can we also point out she's a beautiful, fit woman in the beginning.
She clearly works out, let's be honest.
And in the end. So...
Yeah,
I don't get the
Adam, did you want to say something?
If she asked for the gift, you can't fault the guy for getting her the gift.
It's a huge serious gift, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's a really nice gift if it's wanted.
As mm-hmm. from a man's point of view, if she asks for it, we take what women say literally.
So if she says she wants a scale, if she wants a scale, you're going to get her a scale.
Definitely.
Oh, that's interesting.
Maybe it's a special scale though. You know, there's the cardio scales that have that big smiley face that when you step on, they smile. And then it tells you your weight in your phone, so you don't ever see it below you.
That's hilarious.
It really is amazing. We want to also talk about stress eating around the holidays. I think that's so common. I just overeat around the holidays because there's so much food everywhere you go, right? There's the snacks, there's the cookies, everyone's been doing their baked goods, and it's hard to resist. Then plus, whenever I have people over for the holidays, it feels like I overcook and then I want to finish. I don't want to waste it. So I'm going to eat it. But stress eating at the holidays, you do have some tips about this, Andrea, that I think are pretty helpful. If you don't do all of them, but it keeps some things to keep in mind.
Yeah, well, let's face it. Every holiday gathering either has alcohol, food, sweets, right? So we can't get away from
all of the above, right?
So the best thing I tell people to do is chew gum. When you get to that holiday party, you have fresh breath. You're ready for that kiss and that hug, the big smile. And, you know, that gives you the option, then you have to figure out a place to take your gum out in order to eat anything. So you're at somebody's house, you're at a bar, you're at a restaurant, you have to figure that out. So that delays you. And then the power of protein. I mean, Adam, this is our thing, right? We talk about protein beforehand.
What does protein do for you?
protein stabilizes your blood sugar so that you don't get those peaks and valleys and you won't be keeping craving. Like when you eat sugar, you want more sugar and you keep eating more sugar. Mm-hmm. The other part to that is like the cocktail shrimp. Go for those 36 medium cocktail shrimp, around 200 calories. So the calorie count in protein is very low. You only have 4 grams, you know, 4 calories a gram. So
you're not doing any damage, and it helps you if you're going to be absorbing alcohol.
Yeah, or some of the other things that are there, like the cookies are all sugar and the sweets. So you get that big sugar rush. And remember, when we have a sugar rush, we end up having a slower metabolism. Ooh. And we want to really keep our metabolism up. So good protein and veggies, clear dips, chew gum, mints, stick to things that take a long time to eat. And make sure you only take one thing on your plate at a time. Make yourself go back up for the extra things. Because then it's got that peer pressure of like, oh, they saw me going in line before. And you'll eat less. Because it's hard.
I find that around the holidays, my family puts a lot of things in the food that they don't normally put in. Like I was mentioning the marshmallows. Suddenly the marshmallows come out in the yams. They're in the Jello. Other times of the year do we ever see marshmallows, but they do come out at that time. And there are so many things like that. They're like, oh, this is, you know, like you have nostalgia for this kind of food. And it's just like, it's there. You got to eat it.
Well, and I think there's a lot
indulge
of family
traditions.
There's family traditions. So if you're going to indulge, then, you know, you got to maybe work out or at least scale back during the beginning of the day. You know, we talk a lot of this year about fasting and intermittent fasting. This might be the time to do the intermittent fasting around the holidays.
What's intermittent fasting? Picking one day?
Picking like 7 to 12 hours of not eating. So from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., maybe you're not eating. Or from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m., you're not eating. So you're kind of skipping that early morning breakfast.
Got it. Okay, we're going to be back with our guests in a minute. This is Andrea Metcalf and Adam Dicker. He's a nutritionist and MMA fighter. Wow. And we're going to talk more about some other issues in health and wellness around the holidays. Just a couple of your texts. 847, regarding Peloton, the woman in the commercial doesn't even appear to have a weight issue. Can we just please assume she wants to live a more active, healthy life? By the way, I am a woman. So people not necessarily offended on our text line so far. From the girl in the Peloton ad is very thin. That's all I noticed. Okay. Thanks for noticing. Maybe she was already a pre-Pelotoner. But if you watch it, the Peloton commercial, she's sharing the video with her husband and looking at him as though she's asking for his approval. Oh, okay. Is that what got people? More. Keep your comments coming. We've got more with Andrea and Adam coming up here on WGN. Back here live in the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis, along with Andrea Metcalf, celebrity fitness expert, and Adam Dicker, nutritionist and MMA fighter. Have a text here about the Peloton bike, a $2,000 clothes hanger, because that's what it ends up being, kind of, right? You get all excited, you know, around this time of year, hey, I'm going to work out all the time, it's going to be great, you know, in January, I won't have to hit the gym, and then you just sort of start piling stuff up on it. I've done that before. With much lesser expensive equipment. Andrew, we were talking about magnesium and how there's a growing kind of, people are taking these supplements in ways that I didn't know they were applicable to, and that it just seems like more people are turning to them. Tell us what the magnesium thing is all about, how it might help you, and always a good idea to talk to your doctor about these kinds of things, but what are people finding?
So magnesium is now one of the super supplements that's out there. We're seeing that if you take about 500 milligrams right before bedtime, it will help you with sleep. Whereas melatonin, which has been a natural supplement all along, you know, you'd have to take for 4 to 6 weeks before you see that change. But magnesium is a game changer. It's also been tested recently on med school students, which is great, the residency. And when they took magnesium supplements in the morning and the night, they had less sleep interruption and better energy than the medical residents that didn't. So we're seeing that it helps with stress, anxiety, and sleep, which was something that we didn't really know before. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool. You know, foods that are high in that, like your kale and even oysters, magnesium-rich foods, add them into your diet or try to in a supplement. And I think that's really kind of an interesting thing. And I have tried it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, have you tried it?
Magnesium before bed really works. You know, I'm over 50, if I'll tell you my age at this point. And so sleep interruption's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. So try it. I mean, just check with your doctor first. Another good time to try it is alcohol. Yes, I have a glass of wine here and there, and 4 to 6 ounces of red wine, 4-hour delay of sleep interruption. So if you have a glass of wine at 8 around midnight, you might have that wake up because the system's depressed, and then it comes back to normal. So you get that sleep interruption. Taking magnesium as a way to keep your sleep when you have those holiday parties might be a good way to counteract it.
Is magnesium one of those types of vitamins or supplements that you could overdose? Not necessarily overdose, but
get too much, right?
Yes, have too much of, or is it something that will flow through your system when it has enough?
So just with any mineral or vitamin, you can have a toxicity effect.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see any studies or anything on warnings like, don't take more than 1,000 right. one day, like your
Because I know daily vitamins have some magnesium, and then if you add the supplement, and then the food. So I was just curious in that.
I have not seen anything on that.
That's good.
So I'd say you'd probably be okay. But always check with your doctor first.
We're talking about sleep, which is another issue. I think generally, we as adults don't get enough sleep. I would say I know very few people who get a ton of sleep or as much sleep as they'd like. We have busy schedules, busy lives, and especially this time of year, schedules are interrupted a bit. Things are different. And so you're sort of like, okay, well, I'm just going to deal with whatever I have and go. But there's this interesting study that talks about stop obsessing over your sleep because it's the worrying connected to the sleep that's actually causing you to sleep less and really just, you know, stress the system out even more.
You know, what's so crazy is the apps, I think, have contributed to this as well. But we did learn a lot about sleep deprivation and weight gain with the leptin and ghrelin hormones. So leptin helps your body lose weight by using fat as a fuel, and ghrelin, it helps you increase your appetite. So those are two hormonal effects. When we get less sleep, you get more hungry when you don't sleep as much. And because of that weight loss effect, our apps that are the activity trackers and that have now added your sleep cycles and are you sleeping soundly? And I think that's where people are stressing out, like, oh my God, I only slept for 3 hours soundly a night. And
it's so true.
And I didn't get enough.
Or your Apple Watch tells you, or whatever your device tells you, how much you're sleeping. You're like, oh my gosh, that's not enough. Please, right. I wish I almost didn't know. And then you get more stressed out about it.
Live your life.
It's underrated. It's just really. Adam, you mentioned, Andrea, you used the word game changer. And Adam, I know you know something about a new, I don't know, is it new? A Netflix documentary that a lot of people in your fitness world are talking about. I've just seen the headlines about it. What is it?
It's a really cool documentary on Netflix, and I'll be the first to admit, when I saw that, it got me pumped. I was thinking, all right, I'm going to be vegan right away.
It's about the vegan lifestyle?
It's about these high-performing athletes who have all switched to a vegan lifestyle, and their performances are shooting through the roof. They've got Olympic medalists there. They've got football teams. They've got MMA fighters. And it's just, it's really interesting how plant protein can affect your body differently and help you perform better in sports.
And have you tried it? Because you're an MMA fighter. It's a big deal.
So for the past month, I've kind of half done it. So I've cut out meat. I've cut out chicken. I've kept fish and I've kept eggs.
Mm-hmm. But Andrew, you have a lot of clients who ask you about this, and you don't actually recommend the strict vegan diet. That's not something. It's hard to do anyway. I mean,
it's
in Chicago,
a lot of work.
I don't know how you.
It's a lot of
very
work.
Difficult.
And you have to remember that you're combining broccoli and beans in order to get those complete proteins. And I'll be the first to admit, I went to a vegan yoga surf camp in Costa Rica. It was wonderful having a gourmet chef cook vegan the whole time. I loved it, but I feel like I crave my beef. And I think it's an easy way to get protein is through animal proteins. And they're, you know, we're carnivores by nature. So for me, I'm like, vegan is good. It's only about, 11% of the population, but I still think you need your lean proteins, and definitely fish. I mean, we need those omega-3 fatty acids. We're seeing so much on omega-3s on brain health and brain function and prevention of Alzheimer's. So to me, I think you need your salmon.
Magnesium malate, we have our texter, is not glycinate. So there are different types of magnesium, I guess, supplements. Again, you got to ask your doctor, because it's not all magnesium that you just happen to see on the store shelf that you should start popping without getting some sort of, professional advice on that kind of thing. You mentioned that earlier.
Yep.
And then you also were talking, you said that when it comes to the flu and the cold that's going around right now, everyone, the best advice I always hear is have some honey to try to soothe your symptoms. It's like there's so many natural things out there that you can do to sort of help rather than pop in all the other stuff.
Yeah, we'll get some good rest.
There you go. Back to the sleep thing, right?
Sleep cures everything.
Sleep can totally cure a body. I believe that. Andrea Metcalf, celebrity fitness expert, and Adam Dicker, nutritionist and MMA fighter. Thank you both for being here. Thanks for sharing your thoughts on all things wellness on Wellness Wednesdays. We're back with more here. We want to talk, Lauren, you'll like this. We've got a woman here. Have you ever seen those advertisements for buy a home in Italy for $1 or 1 euro, or bid on a home because this little towns, they want you to attract you because the population is not strong enough or they don't have enough people? Well, we have a Chicago woman here who did just that. She just bid on a home. She plans to move there. She's got this incredible story, and she's going to talk to us coming up. Are you feeling it? You're in Italy. You're overlooking the countryside. Glass of Chianti in your hand.
Sunshine. Maybe some setting.
You know, that could never happen. I'm not going to be able to live there ever. But then you see those ads for the 1 euro homes that they want to. You want you to bid on. You
say, seems well, way maybe. Too good to be true, but. Who knows?
But then you're like, no way. It's a, just wake up. Wake up from that. But there's a woman here with us, and I'm so excited to talk to you. You're a Chicagoan. Her name is Meredith Tabone. Did I say that right?
Yeah. It's we say Tabone in the U.S.
It would
be Tabone.
If you're going to live in Italy, are you going to call yourself Tabone? Tabone.
I probably won't refer to myself a lot, but that's how other people refer to me.
That's true. That doesn't happen. That would be really weird if that happened. You don't even speak Italian, though.
I'm starting to learn.
Nice. This is such an incredible story. I mean, I think a lot of people think that it would be cool to do what you're doing, Meredith, and you took the leap. You're a 40-year-old financial, you're in the finance world.
Yeah, financial advisor, yep.
And you have this career here. You have this life in Chicago, mm-hmm. and you said, you know what, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna buy this house in Italy,
yes,
and just make it happen.
Yep.
How do you get past that anxiety to make such a big decision?
You know, I really didn't have any anxiety. So this all started probably 10 years ago that I decided I wanted to buy a home in Sicily.
Oh.
Just based on my family heritage, even though I had never been there, I just really loved Italy, and I loved the idea of having a home abroad. Because I'm passionate about travel. And in last October, I decided I was going to start the process of getting a dual citizenship with Italy. So I kind of started that process and found out that my great-grandfather was actually from Sambuca.
This town, the actual town.
Yes, I didn't know. Yep. So I found that out. And in January, I got a call. I got a couple of emails from friends. They were forwards of a story that had come out in CNN and I believe the New York Times, talking about a village in Italy that was bidding on or auctioning off homes for starting bid of 1 euro. And I saw that and it said Sambuca. And I thought, I think that's the same town, but that just seems too crazy to be the case. So I went back and checked, and it was indeed the same town that my family is from. And I just thought, this is meant to be. And I thought, there's probably no way I'll get this, but I have to at least try. So talk
about the process of trying, because I'm like, so you see this blurry image on a website. Yeah, yeah, that's my home. I'm going to bid on that.
Yep.
And the bid start at 1 euro.
Yep.
They did go up, but it's not that much, right, for a home.
No. So I went online and looked at the instructions on what I needed to do. And that was probably late January, early February. And then I thought, yep, I'm going to do this. And I set it aside and didn't think about it again until, well, I thought about it, but I didn't do anything about it again until a week before the deadline, which was April 1st. And the process was picking out up to two homes that you wanted to put a bid in on, signing a one-page document with the bid price and the property number, and then doing a 5,000 euro wire transfer to the municipality. So I did that 1 week ahead of time, and the bid got there the day before the last day.
Wow.
I knew that because UPS sent me the confirmation that it had arrived. Did the money transfer, and just had to sit and wait, basically. So there were two homes that I picked out of the 16. One was because it just looked like it was the best.
Mm-hmm.
The other one I picked because it was didn't look terrible, and it was house number 5, and 5 was my favorite number.
Oh, my gosh.
It was also the way that I picked the bid amount. So for everybody from Chicago listening, John Paxson was my favorite player on the Bulls growing up. And
great.
His number is 5, so it was just always my favorite number. And I thought, since I'm sticking with the theme, I'll bid 5,000 euro. Like, I don't know, it's enough that it's far enough away from 1 euro that I could have a chance, but it's not so much that I'm going to make a bad investment.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to my mom about it, and she said, by bid 5,050, And then I thought, you know, just in case
someone
else.
She watches the Price is Right. There are strategies to this. I understand. $1.
And then I thought, why not just go for it and go 5-5-5-5 and have it all be about the five? So was the very hardcore strategy that I used.
Did you have any idea how many people were bidding?
I didn't. I honestly had no idea about any of the stuff that was going on. I had just seen the article. It had an email address. I sent an email in. I got an automatic reply that said, here's a link. This is the process. And I did it. And I kind of, that was like April 1st. April 10th, I broke my ankle. I had to go on bed rest. And I had some other complications due to that. So it kind of went to the back of my mind pretty quickly. And I did send an email like early May, still on bed rest and didn't hear anything back. And on May 12th, I got an email from the municipality saying, congratulations, you won your bid on house number five.
So were you sort of celebrating, screaming, excited? Or you're like, not sure, did I do the right thing?
No, I was super excited. I had a lot of people say, like, you haven't heard anything. Do you think it's a scam? And I'm like, no, it's on CNN. And New York Times. Probably not a scam, plus no. So I just kept thinking maybe there's a chance because they said if you didn't win the bid, you'd get your deposit back. And I did not get a deposit back. So I still was not allowed to travel at that time. So I had to wait for about a month. I got clear to travel, I think, on June 10th. And on June 13th, I took my first trip to Sicily.
Now, I asked you this or the phone when I talked to you that we want to make clear you have no interest in this. You're not promoting this. This isn't something you're not paying you to be part of this.
No.
You're just
not
a Chicago woman who said, I would like to do this. Yes. And it actually has worked out. Have you? Yes. I'm looking at the picture. I don't know. Is that the picture? I just want to hold it for confirmation.
Yes.
That it does. Well, it looks like a project, as they call it in the home improvement world.
Yes.
It looks old and like it has a long, rich history in this Italian area, but probably you're going to put a little money in that, right? You're going to put some dough in that.
Yes. The requirements. So it has no running water or electricity. It was rebuilt in the early 1700s. The bottom half of it, there's two doors you can see from the picture. The door on the right was how they guided horses in, and the horses lived on the ground floor. So it's very old and has not been lived in quite a while. The requirement is that you do at least a 17,000 euro investment, that it be in living condition, and that it be completed within 3 years. If you do all of those things, then you get your 5,000 euro deposit back and the title to your home.
And this town has less than 6,000 people in it and shrinking all the time, is my understanding, which is one of the reasons they do these promotions, to try to bring people like you there.
Yes. Yep.
And what do they expect? You said you might start a business as well.
Yeah. So for now, I am only 40. So I shouldn't say only 40, but I'm 40.
40 is young.
I'm young. I'm 40 years young. And I love my job here, but it is flexible. So my goal right now will be to spend probably 4 to 6 weeks a year there. Maybe more if I can make it happen, until I'm ready to retire and move there full time. And yes, I do want to start a business there. I want to start a kind of boutique wine cafe, that also promotes local artisans. So there are a lot of people from abroad that are moving into the area, but there are also local, artists that are trying to kind of promote their work. And I want to combine those, some of my loves, wine, art, food. And just help bring jobs to the community and also have a place for people who are coming to visit the town, you know, to be able to come and hang out and, you know, share stories. And
what a cool life experience.
Yes. Have you been able to meet anybody else that bid on the houses or bought them?
Anybody else from America even in this town? Do you know?
There is one other couple, and I don't know that. I think they're both American. Maybe one is. And I just met her on the street because my friend and I were walking, and she was waiting for somebody else and said, hey, I like your earrings, to my friend. And we knew she was American just from the way she spoke. And I think she and her husband had lived there years ago and then moved away and then just recently moved back. But they are not part of this the scheme that I'm talking about. They just have happened to live there. Hmm. I've met one other person who purchased through this program. And I actually had a couple of people reach out to me after the CNN article went online to say that they had actually won through the same process and hadn't done anything yet and asked for help. So,
it seems so daunting. I think to be taking this leap and going to a place you don't even speak the language yet. You don't seem fazed by that. I know there's this familial connection because of your history and your family kind of coming from this region. There must be some sort of internal kind of comfort in that. You got to be excited about this experience.
I'm really excited. I was a little bit, I don't want to say I was scared, but I was a little overwhelmed because I know that there's a lot of that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I hadn't necessarily heard anything bad. I also didn't know until after I found out I won the bid that over 100,000 people had sent in emails asking about it. And I think like thousands of people visited the town and over 50 people purchased properties ahead of the auction even happening because they didn't want to wait and chance losing a property. So I knew there was a lot going on all of a sudden after I had already won. But I was mostly worried about getting an architect and a contractor, and I had an amazing friend, who made a suggestion for me to go online on Instagram, and start tracking and watching the town and people, you know, talking about the town. And that's how I found the architect, and he's absolutely amazing. Oh. The people there are absolutely amazing. As soon as I stepped foot there, I just felt more at home than I've ever been anywhere else.
Wow.
And I've just had an incredibly warm reception from everyone, the mayor, my neighbors, the people at the inn that I stay at. Everybody's just been very, very excited. They do all tell me on a regular basis that they can't wait until I can speak better Italian. I hear that about 10 times a day.
How's their English there in San
They have
Buca.
None. No, there's nothing. Nobody speaks English.
So you're doing
English
a lot of hand gestures?
A lot of Google Translate.
Just talk really loudly. I think that's what that's what works. It's really good.
I already do that,
Where
and I talk
bathroom?
With my hands. No, Google Translate's been a big help, and I do speak some Spanish, and it's pretty similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Translatable,
I'm getting there.
Romance languages, yeah.
It's. I mean,
it reads pretty similar. It doesn't sound as similar, but I'm making it work.
Anybody in your family kind of like, oh, are you really going to do this? I mean, you're moving from Chicago. I assume most of your family is here, and then you move to Italy at some point soon when your house is done.
No, I actually won't move there. I'll just spend time there. I'm still going to be here. I won't move there until I retire. But I'll go there, for a couple of months a year and have a business there. Some of my family members thought that I was nuts and that it was probably a scam.
How'd Thanksgiving go when you told them about this?
I was actually on a safari in Africa for Thanksgiving, so I didn't have to worry about that.
Nice. You had an exciting life, Meredith. You're not going to end with anything like, I wish I could have done that sort of thing. No regrets for you.
No, I just got back from that yesterday after like 26 hours on an airplane, so the jet lag is starting to set in right now.
Thank you for doing this then, and thank you for sharing your story. Meredith Tabone, soon to be Tabone. When she lives in Italy, Sambuca, Italy. She just bought a house, and it's an incredible story. So thank
really
you.
Really go with your gut story, too. Everything just fell into place
Step
for you.
Step into the fear.
Yeah.
Dream big.
How often do you see that? Wonderful stuff. Thanks, Meredith.
Thank
More
you
of
for
WGN
having me.
Radio coming up. It's me, Anna DeVlantis, here 1 to 3 on WGN, live from the Skyline Studios. We were talking earlier about the Peloton bike losing $942 million of market value the day that holiday ad came out, and the internet just reacted with absolute scorn, saying it was sexist, causing the stock to drop nearly 10%. I didn't read it that way, I got to say. I really didn't.
I
thought
either.
It looked like a very, very generous gift and that she was a very fit person who probably is on an exercise bike an awful lot. 815, getting a piece of exercise equipment as a gift, that's great. What I find annoying about the commercial is the woman recording herself and then playing it all back for her husband, like husband pleasing or whatever.
See, I would say that's a very nice husband that's willing to sit down and watch a year worth of videos of me getting on a bike. I wouldn't even want to watch that.
What she showed him? Like her?
I don't know. That's kind of what it seemed, right? She's like doing a year later kind of wrap up video. I don't know. It's the whole thing is just weird when you think about it.
The ad was titled The Gift That Gives Back. And in case you didn't see it, it shows a woman receiving that Peloton bike from her husband on Christmas morning. And, you know, she then documents, her year-long fitness journey in selfie videos before compiling the clips in a thank you note for her husband. So that's what people, I guess, did not like. It was playing on a negative stereotype. Again, I didn't have a problem with that ad. But
I didn't initially see anything either. And here's the other thing. Again, because she is a fit woman, I wouldn't take it as an insult to get a bike. I assumed that she asked for the bike. and she wanted to do it for herself. You know, exercise is a great way to look great, but it's also really great to help improve your happiness.
People find energy from it. I'm not a big workout person, but I feel like people say that I need my workout or else I don't have energy for the day. I can't.
Improves your mood, improves your energy. So for all you know, maybe she is a very unhappy person and this new bike made her a happier person. So
there's a lot to put on an exercise bike, but yeah, maybe. I would agree with the other texter that this would become like a clothes hanger for me. You have one. We used to have an exercise bike, not nearly this nice, but we had one and it just, yeah, it just.
You do it for a month and then all of a sudden you fall out of the habit.
No one's on it. It just, yeah.
It's hard to keep up with an exercise routine.
That's what happens. All right, we're looking at some other stories that are trending today. It's not just that one, but also, did you see this one? Willie Nelson says he has stopped smoking because it almost killed him. And he's no longer smoking marijuana, no longer smoking anything due to ongoing health and breathing issues. You saw him, remember, at the award show.
The award show, he was struggling a bit. Is actually being mild. Mm-hmm. You could see it. You can hear it. And it's very sad. And he's an older man, so you kind of expect those things. And I do imagine any kind of smoke in your lungs, whether it's cigarette smoke or weed, is going to be a bit damaging, obviously some more than others.
You just wonder about the health situation there. It was Casey Musgraves, wasn't it, that he did the duet with?
It was very sweet, very, very nice.
Oh, he was so sweet, so respectful, and I just love his voice. It was it was sad to see that him like that. But this is what he's saying. You know, I have abused my lungs quite a bit in the past, so breathing is a little difficult these days.
I don't smoke anymore. I take better care of myself today than I did then.
His health issues have prompted rumors that he's near death, struggling to stay alive. Do those rumors upset him?
I don't give a excuse me. I'm here. I'm glad to be here. I'm lucky to be here.
Go figure. Marijuana becomes legal and he stops smoking marijuana. I mean, it's...
Well, and it's been something very tied to his brand, if you want to say
totally
that.
It totally has.
For quite a while. So I think that's why it's such a big story. It's so shocking, and especially to have a negative medical side effect kind of brought to light about marijuana. Mm-hmm. You always hear about the positives.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's only marijuana. I don't know. I mean, obviously is associated heavily with that and the calming effects he has gotten from that over the years. And
I wonder if he'll have edibles and stuff. I mean, it doesn't mean he... Mm-hmm. is necessarily going to stop ingesting marijuana.
That's true. There are a lot of places to get it now and growing, including here in Illinois, coming January 1st. Nelson isn't planning on stopping touring anytime soon, he told the local affiliate, that singing for an hour on stage is really the best exercise he can get for his lungs. So he's going to be back on tour. He added that his tour bus is really home to him. It's pretty cool. I knew a woman here,
a restaurant owner,
who he was really close with. So whenever he came in town, he'd stop his tour bus by a restaurant and greet everybody. And he's just as nice as you'd expect from Willie Nelson. So wish him the best. Also trending, did you see this one? Lauren, I think this one I'd be surprised if it did not catch your attention. The Rock calls himself Baby Yoda's father and says he'll introduce him to his little brother, Kevin Hart. I'm starting to get a point where I don't even understand anything Star Wars anymore. I know Baby Yoda because this is the one, the little Yoda that started trending and everyone thought was super
from
cute.
Mandalorian. Yeah,
captured our hearts over from The Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
But what is this about?
I think everyone is trying to make their own, or kind of put their own spin on Baby Yoda because the memes, as we were talking about yesterday, are just infinite now. There are just so many different types of memes related to Baby Yoda. And now people are trying to insert themselves into the story. I don't know if the other one was true. There was a star that said that they claimed to have seen Baby Yoda in public at a basketball game, something along those lines. So now you have The Rock chiming in on this and obviously bringing in his good buddy Kevin Hart into the mix.
He went to Instagram to post a picture of himself cradling Baby Yoda in his arms as if he was a child. Oh gosh, I'd love to see that. I gotta check that out. Thank you all so much for the well wishes. And now we're gonna bring this little nugget home to meet his brother, Kevin Hart, for real. They're all getting on this. I gotta tell you, one of our listeners told us yesterday, and thank you, I would imagine this is gonna be a hot seller for holidays, anything Baby Yoda related.
Absolutely.
It's so cute. It's so cute. I mean, absolutely adorable. But then a listener told us that really isn't any merchandise available.
I gotta imagine it's gotta be ready to go. It's been made, but maybe not distributed yet, because that would be a big mistake for that brand to not have a bunch of toys of Baby Yoda out.
How, and Baby Yoda isn't really, you know, Star Wars much better than me. it's not really a baby, right? Is it's
Is he even related to Yoda? He's technically 50 years old, but that's because this species can live to be hundreds of years old. So he is a baby in the sense for him, but you know, when we first hear about the Mandalorian searching for this bounty, which is Baby Yoda, it's like the subject is 50 years old. So you can imagine how shocked he was to see this little little creature that is cute as a button sitting in a little kind of carrier.
Yeah, everyone's getting on the bandwagon, though. The Rock and Kevin Hart obviously promoting their new movie as well in the process. And I guess they're known for trolling each other on social media. Does that go back? I wasn't aware of that, but apparently they do.
They're like brothers. They love to nitpick at each other and make fun of each other for the obvious stuff, like, you know, Kevin Hart's size or just something along the lines of The Rock's past career, you know, starting in wrestling and things like that.
He had a huge career before that, just before he made it movies. Okay, the last one we have here, trending stories. Oh, wait, Willie has edibles for his weed needs.
There you go. Too.
So you were right. You called that one out right there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he smoked weed for a reason. I wouldn't imagine he would just flat out stop because he can't smoke it.
630, I don't see anything wrong with that ad. I'm a runner. I have no problem with someone giving me running shoes for a gift. I don't think it means that I have to lose weight, right?
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that. And I guess it does depend if she asked for it. So I bought my wife an HR monitor for Valentine's once. Big mistake. It was a heart rate monitor on Valentine's. She didn't make the connection. She thought it was about getting like fit or getting heart healthy. Oh.
See, then you should just get an Apple Watch because you can hide the fact that you want the heart rate monitor in there, but it also does a lot of other great things.
Oh, gosh, it could be so complicated, especially early in a relationship, knowing what to get somebody because everyone's going to read something into it. I mean, as women, I think we do read things into gifts sometimes early on, maybe not later, but early on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
You're like, okay, what is the intention? This is definitely maybe more for you than for me, or do you even know me?
Is it a red rose or a yellow rose? What does the pink rose mean? What does the yellow one mean?
This is my least favorite
color. Are we far along that you should have at least a pink rose or a red rose?
Yeah, the white means like friends, the red means love, the pink means just kind of like you.
It's so complicated.
Why? Yeah, how did that even become a thing?
Why do we make it so complicated? I don't know. All right, Rokan's coming up. He's not complicated at all. We'll be talking to him in just a little bit. Stay with us here on WGN Radio.